WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. The surge of unvaccinated COVID-19 patients at Augusta Health is now so bad that all non-emergency procedures are on hold and staff are exhausted. We have an update on the wrangling over political maps, and we've got our Friday discussion of the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, September 24th. In the past 4 weeks, 23 people have died of COVID-19 at Augusta Health in Fishersville, WMRA's Randy Behage reports.
Augusta Health is now operating under red surge conditions, which means that all non-emergency procedures have been put on hold so the staff can care for COVID patients.
They're tired, they're exhausted, but they're incredibly resilient, and everything that they do well. But it's certainly not sustainable in the long run.
Mary Mannix is the president of the health system. She said that in this recent wave of hospitalizations and deaths, they have at times had to use a mobile morgue trailer provided by the state to accommodate all the dead.
Let's hope that people rise above the polarization of the discussion and focus on life instead of death. When I just conducted my rounds, I saw so many young people that are so critically ill, that have young families, and it would just be preferable if we could increase our vaccination rate in this community and get to what we call herd immunity so that these variants stop morphing and we stop the unnecessary death.
Mannix did apply for medical staffing assistance from the federal government, but was told they were unable to help at this time. She and the staff are hoping that a recent dip in their number of COVID patients could be the start of a trend.
Our prevalence has decreased for the last couple days, as has our testing positivity rate. And so we are hopeful that those could be true signals that we may be starting to enter a plateau. It's premature to draw that conclusion, but that's what we're praying for.
There are currently 55 patients with COVID at the hospital, down from 63 last week.
In a statement on Thursday, the city of Stanton joined with Augusta Health in asking that all qualified members of the community choose to be vaccinated. The city noted the current surge is the highest number of infections since the pandemic began and has yet to reach the peak number of positive cases expected this year. Augusta Health is a financial supporter of WMRA. That support does not affect our coverage. A 13-year-old boy from Charlottesville is missing, and Randy has more.
CBS 19 reported that 13-year-old Jaheim Henson was reported missing on August 23rd and was last seen on the 800 block of Hardy Drive. Jaheim is black, 5 feet 10 inches tall, and weighs 130 pounds. Police say he has been seen in North Carolina, Richmond, and Waynesboro since going missing. He did have contact with his family earlier this month, but has not returned home. In a press release issued on Wednesday, the Charlottesville Police Department said he may be back in the Charlottesville area. Anyone with information about his whereabouts has been asked to contact the police department at 434-970-3280. For WMRA News, I'm Randy Behage.
On Thursday, Virginia's Redistricting Commission again struggled with directing its map drawers on which data to prioritize. The group is preparing drafts for the final 2 weeks of deliberations, as Patrick Larson with Partner Station VPM reports.
The Redistricting Commission is still waiting on an analysis of voting patterns in racial groups. In the absence of that data, Delegate Marcus Simon, a Fairfax Democrat, wanted to instruct the cartographers to consider where minority communities hold power in Virginia's current districts. That motion failed to get enough support among commissioners. Draft maps for Central Virginia will be reviewed on October 7th. The meeting will serve as an opportunity for the panel to review and hear public feedback. The commission has until October 10th to recommend new voting district boundaries.
Patrick Larson reporting. And we reported on this yesterday. The Supreme Court of Virginia is already weighing in on redistricting, closing the door on the practice of prison gerrymandering. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has more on that.
The Supreme Court of Virginia is rejecting a challenge to Virginia's new law ditching the longstanding practice of prison gerrymandering. That means the next set of maps for the General Assembly and Congress will no longer include incarcerated people in the rural communities where prisons are located, but instead count them at their home address or last known address. Daquan Love at the Virginia NAACP says this is a victory for all Virginians.
When a person is incarcerated, they're not the only person that's incarcerated. In reality, their entire family has a void that needs to be filled. And so it is not appropriate to have those resources artificially inflated due to temporary relocation of incarcerated individuals in some of those smaller rural communities.
The change will mean a huge loss for rural communities where prisons are located. Buckingham County Supervisor Jordan Miles says his county stands to lose more than 2,000 constituents.
These people are sleeping, living, eating, breathing there. And more so, they are there much longer than they ever will be again in the place they once called home.
The end of prison gerrymandering also comes at a time when the newly created redistricting commission will be drawing the new maps instead of the General Assembly, a change complicated by late census data, which will likely lead to elections for the House of Delegates this year, next year, and the year after that. Michael Pope.
The night before the Robert E. Lee statue was removed from Richmond's Monument Avenue, all traces of the movement that led to it being taken down were confiscated and stored by state officials. Meg Schifres with VPM reports.
The area surrounding the Lee Monument was once covered by memorials to victims of police violence, community gardens, and a sign proclaiming the space Marcus David Peters Circle, named for a black man who was shot and killed by Richmond police in 2018. Princess Blanding, Peters' sister and a candidate for governor, said removing these items placed by the community is a signal that the state's not willing to reckon with the real legacy of white supremacy.
It made the city, it made the state have to face all of the blood that was on their hands.
According to the Department of General Services, the memorial will be transferred to the Library of Virginia for temporary storage. Local activist Lawrence West says instead of hiding them, they should be recognized as having historic value.
It's a definite suppression of black history. This did happen. You know, there was a revolution on Monument Avenue.
A DGS spokesperson said due to its size, the sign will remain with the department until a determination is made about where it will permanently reside.
Meg Schifres reporting. Petersburg is banning firearms from public spaces. The Petersburg City Council unanimously passed a measure on Tuesday barring people from carrying firearms in any place open to the public. That ban includes city buildings, public parks, city-owned recreation or community centers, and any public street, road, alley, or sidewalk. On-duty law enforcement officers and armed security personnel acting on a contract with the city are exempt. Well, finally today, there are new polling insights into the race for governor this week and a new direction for who and what gets memorialized in the former capital of the Confederacy. Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope discuss the week in Virginia politics.
We've seen a number of new polls come out that have upended the race for governor. Jeff Shapiro, walk us through all of these many polls and what we now know about the race for governor.
Michael, in recent days, we've seen polls by the Washington Post, Virginia Commonwealth University, Mary Washington University. These are, of course, the latest of many, and they are again showing the race for governor between Terry McAuliffe and Glenn Youngkin tight. For example, in the Mary Washington poll, among registered voters, McAuliffe leads Youngkin by 5%. Among likely voters, Youngkin leads McAuliffe by 5%. So you have these different universes, different results. Now, that seems to be a reflection of many things. Democratic fatigue, this long, long, long Democratic winning streak. Joe Biden and Ralph Northam's approval ratings are down in Virginia. There's economic uncertainty, of course, the pandemic.
So the race for governor is essentially deadlocked heading into the second and final debate next week. Jeff Shapiro, what can we expect from that debate hosted by the Schar School at George Mason University next week?
You know, as in that first debate in very red Southwest Virginia, the debate in very blue Northern Virginia is a chance for these candidates to reach to a broader audience. Now, an issue about which we might be hearing a lot more next week is the possibility of a partial government shutdown next month if Congress can't come up with a financing plan that allows the government to pay its bills. Now, that's significant because remember, in 2013, when McAuliffe was running and would win, against Ken Cuccinelli. There was a government shutdown in early October. That was largely blamed on the Republicans. It allowed McAuliffe to surge. However, it was short-lived, even though it reflected a shift of the federal vote in Northern Virginia to the Democrats. It was brief, of course, because of another screw-up in Washington, and that was the rollout of Obamacare, which allowed the Republicans to press ahead. And when it was all over, Ken Cuccinelli lost by about 2 percentage points.
So one last question before we wrap up. We have seen statues, mainly Confederate statues, across Virginia coming down. This is an era where we have seen removal of many statues and monuments. But we've also, there's some symmetry to this though, right? Because we've also seen some new monuments going up there in your neck of the woods, right? And in Richmond, there's a new memorial for emancipation, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, now this is going up. It was unveiled this week, 2 weeks after the Lee statue, state-owned Lee statue up on Monument Avenue, came down. Now, this Emancipation and Freedom Monument is a project of the State Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Commission. It features two 12-foot likenesses, one of a just liberated man, his chains shattered, the other of a woman holding an infant. What I think is important here is that slavery is very much a part of Richmond's historic fabric. It was long ignored or dismissed. Now, post-George Floyd, racial reckoning has fast-forwarded in this town, and clearly the monument unveiled this week is a testimony to that.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation next week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. Let me take a moment to ask you to support it. Today is the last day of WMRA's fall fund drive. You can help make sure that WMRA doesn't just stay healthy, but continues to grow and provide more for you in the future. And you've probably noticed more local news. We are very proud that Randy B. Hagee is now reporting full-time for WMRA. Support our strengthened commitment to local news at WMRA.org. Or if you're listening on the app, just tap that red donate button. Only takes a few dollars a month and a couple minutes of your time. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.